So what are we doing here in this world? What are we doing here in this body? How did you get into this body? I'm asking this question, you have to ask yourself. Yeah? Really ask yourself very deeply. Why were you born? And then come up with a normal answer, because of greed and hate and delusion. What is the purpose of your life? What is the aim? What is the goal? Before you were born, you know, what did you think or what did you plan to accomplish in this life? Or did you just dilly-dally around, you know, and just happen to be in this body, yeah? And then just work with the conditions that are there, you know, until the day you die, and then you go to the next body. It's a question that we normally don't ask ourselves. I mean, not seriously, but we should ask ourselves. Seriously, what I'm here for? What is the purpose or what is the meaning of my life? Not what is the general meaning of life. What is the meaning of my life? What am I supposed to do? You didn't come here to this monastery just because, you know, I mean, it just happens, like everything in this world happens. Something attracted you. So there was a deeper sense, yeah, within you, who attracted you to Buddhism, who attracted you to this kind of life. And then, what do you do? Then you come here, and some of you become monks. When they become monks, they suddenly realize, you know, I mean, the dukkha has gone. At least most of the dukkha that we experience in our world has gone. And so we get complacent. And we don't ask ourselves, you know, if we are on the right track. If we really, you know, put all our effort in to get the hell out of the cycle of birth and death. I mean, that's why we ordained for. And the thing that brought us here is dukkha. Yeah? And dukkha is the first noble truth. And I don't think that you understand this first noble truth in its depth. In its whole depth, dukkha is dissatisfaction, discomfort, dis-ease, suffering and pain. And we have dukkha all day long. When we are hungry, it's dukkha. When we are thirsty, it's dukkha. When we meet with the things that we don't want to meet, it's dukkha. When we don't meet with the things that we want to meet, it's dukkha. And we don't seem to understand it because we still take this body that brings us a lot of this dukkha as something that is inherent. Something that we are born with, you know, and we have to cope with, and we don't consider it anymore. Well, that's just the way it is, yeah? And this shouldn't be. I mean, the body brings us a lot of dukkha. Every day we have to get up. Don't like to get up, it's dukkha. When we sit long, we have to change posture, it's dukkha. When we're hungry, it's dukkha. When we are thirsty, it's dukkha. And then comes the dukkha of the mind. The dissatisfaction, you know, that is inherent with us. We don't want to see it. We just know it, you know, it is there, and then we put it aside. And that's not what we should do. We should look at it closely every moment, every moment of our life, every moment of one day. Why am I doing the things that I'm doing? Why do I change my posture? Dukkha. Why am I eating? Dukkha. Why am I drinking? Dukkha. Why do I want to do something else? Dukkha. Because there is a state of mind, or the state of a citta, where there is no dukkha. Where we don't want anything. Even if the body would be hungry, we don't want to eat. Even if the body is thirsty, we don't want to drink. We are just happy. And we forget this. We tend to forget it. And it is easily reached with the training of samadhi. With putting your mind on one point. Be it the tip of the nose and observe the breath going in, going out. Not following the breath. Or mentally repeat the word Buddha. Once the mind gets calm. Once thoughts are stopping, and once memories are stopping, there is no dukkha. It's complete satisfaction. We don't want anything. And this is something, this is a state of mind that shows us that there is something else. We cope with life every day, you know, doing the things that we do, constantly forgetting that there is a state of mind where we don't want to do anything. Where we are just satisfied with the way things are. And it's called samadhi, upachara samadhi. There is no future, so we don't have to plan. There is no past, so we don't have to think about the past. And the most important thing is, we are not lonely. How many things are we doing because of loneliness? We are separated from ourselves. We are separate from our true self. And that's what people don't realize. And all our actions in the world, we try to find the unification. And dukkha arises from this dissatisfaction, from us being separated from ourselves. In the moment we unify, we don't need anything. And that's interesting. It all stops, All the desire stops the moment we are unified. Of course, how can there be loneliness if we are unified with what we are seeking for? We might not know it, that we are seeking for this unification, but the moment we are unified, in this upachara samadhi, there's no loneliness, there's no wish, there's no desire, everything stops for a while. Until we come out and then everything seems to be the same. And it hasn't gotten down deep enough for us to realize, whatever we do, is because, we lost the connection to our true self. We have lost it with whatever we do, we try to get it back. But because we are not realizing that we have lost, you know, the connection to ourselves, that's why we try to do all other things. Distracting ourselves from the real problem. I mean, most... why do people, you know, choose to live in families or in groups? Yeah? Because, I mean, they seek some sort of unification with other people. And if they don't, yeah, if they cannot associate with a group, I mean, they feel lonely, they feel, yeah, frightened. So they try, you know, to find a group, you know, that satisfies their need. But this won't hold very long. And then we try to do other things. So the core of the problem is, you know, I mean, we are separated from our true self. And because of the separation, we have all this dukkha. Not only the dukkha of the body that comes with the body, yeah, that is clear. But the dukkha, you know, of the mind, you know, that is dissatisfied, that wants this unification. We are lost, you know, I mean, it's just like we are lost people. So any kind of motive is born because of the dukkha. What we see mostly, you know, is the dukkha, you know, is the dukkha of the body. And we think we think it's mostly of the body, you know, that where the dukkha is coming from. And part of it is coming from body. Most of it is coming from, actually, you know, from our separation. So why do we try? And that, one of the things, you know, dukkha is always making us change something. Yeah? We want to change the way things are, because then we think, you know, it is not dukkha. We want to change the world when we are young, we want to change the world. Yeah? When we get older, we know we can't change the world, so we want to change the people around us, or we want to change, yeah? Some people want to change their rooms, yeah? The curtains have been there long enough, now let's change the curtains, let's change the wallpapers, let's change the furniture, and then we are satisfied for a moment, yeah? until the dukkha comes again. Now we have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, you know, and then we get dissatisfied after a while, and then we're looking for another girlfriend or boyfriend, yeah? And so constantly changing, not knowing why we are doing these things. It is because of the lack, you know, the lack of unification. Because once, and it is not so difficult to reach the stage of upachara samadhi, once we get unified, we don't want anything. And that is one of the key things that we need, yeah? We need to accomplish, yeah? Getting into samadhi, stop to think, yeah? Stop to memorize, yeah? And everything becomes clear, at least for a moment. And our dukkha ceases to exist for that moment. It comes because of the, you know, of the thoughts, you know. And the thoughts separate us from ourselves. The memories separate us from others. Because then suddenly, you know, there's I and mine, and there's he and his. That is the separation that takes place. The moment thought comes into play. If you don't think, you know, I mean, we are not separated from other people. How can we? Because we are all the same, we are all of the same essence. So when you look at something, you know, ask yourself, you know, when you want to change something, what is the reason? And you always find the first noble truth, dukkha. What did the Lord Buddha say is the second noble truth? The origin of dukkha. Not meeting what one wants to meet. Parting with what one loves, yeah? trying to become something that one cannot become? Trying not to be something that one doesn't want to be? That's the cause of dukkha. Wanting, desire. Desire to be, desire to become, desire not to be, not to become. And all our problems start there. We want to be somebody. We want to be famous, or we want to be successful, we want to be rich, we want to be kind, or we want to be, whatever. And we see we can't do that. Some people can do it to a certain degree, other people cannot do it. And that's where dukkha arises. If we are just happy with the way things are, then there's no need to change. If you realize that our desire is always trying, to bring us something, what we long for, what we desire for, but this desire, the means, the object of this desire never brings us lasting satisfaction. That's what the Lord Buddha said, what he taught us. Things don't bring us the lasting satisfaction. For instance, when we are hungry, we eat, we are satisfied for a moment until we get hungry again. When we are tired and sleep, we are satisfied for a while until, we get tired again. So things constantly change. And that's the principle of anicca. The other thing is that we identify with these changing things. We identify with the changing feelings that happen to occur within our vicinity. Or we identify with the thoughts that happen, that are phenomena that happen within our vicinity. That's the principle of anatta. It's not me, it's not mine, it doesn't belong to me. It's not myself. And what are the things that are not myself? It's a body that is not myself. Body doesn't do what I tell him to do. If it's sick, and I tell him, to get healthy, it doesn't get healthy. And if it's about to die and I don't want to die, it still dies. It's a phenomenon. And this is something we really do not really realize. We identify with things that we don't really have control over. We identify ourselves with the body. We identify ourselves with the feelings. Just think about feelings. Can you change a bad feeling into a good feeling? So how can you say it's my feeling? Can you change a mood? If you're in a bad mood, can you change it, to be suddenly, I realize bad mood, it's unpleasant, let's change it into something that is pleasant. Can't do it. Because you're not in control of it. It's a phenomena that arises and will cease. A good feeling, turns into a neutral feeling, or in a bad feeling, and a bad feeling will change, over time into a good feeling or a neutral feeling. Just like the sun comes up and it goes down. And then it's night, and then it comes up again and it goes down again. This is the principle of anatta. It's not me. We have to realize that these thoughts, these memories, memory and association, that we think it is us, it's my memory. If you're in control of the memory, then you say, no, I don't want to have any memories for the moment, and they shouldn't come. But they still come. Just like feelings. They come. Just like thoughts. So these are four groups already. It's a body, it's feeling, it's memory association, and it's thought. And the last group is consciousness. And there's nothing else that we would consider ourselves, than these five groups. And the Lord Buddha taught us that these five groups are anicca, anatta, and dukkha. And dukkha is dissatisfaction because they're constantly changing. The body is changing, you know. I mean, when it is young, we like it, you know, because it is powerful, it has a lot of energy. When it becomes older, we don't like it anymore. When it's too young, we don't like it, yeah. I mean, remember the time when you were 7 or 8 years ago, 8 years of old age, you wanted to be 18. You wanted to be a grown up. So you didn't like the, you know, the growing of the body to its, you know, to its adulthood. And then you don't like it when it, you know, when it slowly diminishes. When it slowly decays. At the age of 45, it slowly starts to decay. And it gets worse and worse and worse until we are finally, until the body finally dies away. And there's no control that we have over this. And consciousness is the last, it's the last group. Yeah? Consciousness of being sense data, you know, I mean a touch, you know, a feeling, you know, a sound, you know, that comes into contact with us. Consciousness knows, you know, I mean, that something, a sense, has been contacted, and then the memory looks up, you know, what kind of sense it is, yeah? And says it's hearing, or it's seeing, or it is this, or it's that. That's all. Yeah? I mean, we have been trapped into this world of the five, yeah? Of the senses. We have been trapped into the world of these five groups, yeah? And believe these groups are us, are me and are mine. And this is something, you know, we can use, yeah. We can use these principal characteristics of this universe, yeah, the three, anicca, anatta, dukkha, anicca, impermanence, whatever arises has to cease. So a feeling, you know, that arises has to cease, yeah. So why we are still seeking for these feelings? Why are we still seeking for these memories, for these thoughts, yeah? They arise and cease, you know, they change into something else. And why do we identify with these things? That's me, that's mine, that's myself, yeah, belongs to me. If it belongs to you, if it belongs to you, like your like the clothes that you have, I mean, if you have a black shirt on, you know, I mean, you can change it to a white shirt if you don't like it anymore. But if you have a black feeling or a dark feeling, you can't change it into a, you know, white feeling, into a happy feeling. So why do you believe it's you? So the origin of our dukkha is always the constant desire to want something. But the root of it is this, you know, we want to get unified. Because the moment we are unified with our true self, then there's no desire. The desire lapses for that time. And this is something we should realize, and this is something we should work on, at least in meditation, to get to this stage and to realize, I mean, there is something else. Yeah? The moment we are unified, yeah? I mean, we don't want anything. The moment the thoughts and memories are stopping, I mean, there's no problems anymore. The problems are created by thoughts. And memories together. There is no problem at all. We create these problems and we can't cope with these problems and then we feel stressed. Yeah? It's not. Yeah? It's imaginary. It's illusionary. All our ways, all the way, you know, that we think, you know, we are and then we should be, you know, it is illusionary. We don't realize what is there. When you close your eyes, you know, and you feel, then there's feeling. Yeah? And then you see it's changing. Yeah? At the moment, you know, I mean, there might be no mind feelings, there are just bodily feelings. Yeah? Feelings are two groups, you know, bodily feelings and mind feelings. Yeah? So you feel the sensation of the body, and that's it. Yeah? And the sensation of the body constantly changes. It's not me, it's not mine. Yeah? Use this principle, yeah? to distance yourself from it, yeah? I mean, if you think you have a problem, that just say there's a problem, yeah? And then look at it, and then you see the problem just disappears. The problem is created by our desires that we cannot fulfill. Yeah? Understand this. Huh? I mean, all what there is, you know, there is walking, there is, you know, there is standing, there is lying down, there are four positions of the body. The third noble truth is just you know, I mean, a happy statement that there's an end of dukkha, and the fourth noble truth is that what we practice. It consists of three columns. Sila, Samadhi, Panna. So sila are the five precepts, or when you're here in the monasteries are the eight precepts. For the monks it's the 227 rules, yeah, so you keep them, yeah. And then the practice of samadhi, that is absolutely of absolute importance for the beginning. Yeah? We have to get the mind calm. We have to get the mind one-pointed. We have to get the mind centered onto before we can do investigation. Yeah? Most people in the West believe, you know, investigation is just observing what the mind does. Yeah? You can observe it to the end of your day and you will not become clever. Investigation is asking the right question. Just like I said in the beginning. Why am I born? What the hell am I doing in this body? Oh, why do I want to change things? These are questions that you should ask. Or what happened this morning? What did I think? The daily reflection. These are things that lead to wisdom. Panya, the serpent. Asking the right kind of questions. What am I doing in this body? Is the right kind of question. What is the body? Is the right kind of question. Not why. What? What am I doing in this body? Asking the right kind of questions, you know, leads us to wisdom. And the wisdom doesn't come from thinking, yeah? Because that is considered to be knowledge, yeah? When we think about something, I mean, we can't go to the depth of it, yeah? We can't go to the core of it. We will not understand it. We will only understand it in the framework of our thoughts. And that's not the solution. I mean, look at the world, you know. I mean, that's how the world operates, yeah? They try to figure something out, yeah? And they're figuring out something with their mind, within the framework of this world, you know. I mean, within the model, yeah? I mean, they're put on this world, yeah? No matter what it is, if it is business, you know, then it's a business model. You know, if it is engineering, then it's an engineering model. And within this framework, that they try and they think they can control it. So asking the right question, yeah, I mean, what is happening? Yeah? I mean, why did I get out from meditation? Yeah? So why did I stop meditating? That's a good question. What happened? What happened? Before I stopped, before I got up, or before I stopped walking. What happened? What actually happened? These are the questions, you know, that lead us, you know, in the direction of wisdom. And if we reflect about, if we do our daily reflection, yeah, I mean, then we can start with the morning, yeah? When I woke up, you know, what kind of thoughts were in my mind, yeah? How did this, you know, and then we go on, what did I do then, you know, I got up, you know, and then I sat for meditation or I walked for meditation. I mean, our day becomes much more clearer when we think about it. Yeah? When we use the right kinds of thoughts, you know, asking ourselves. Yeah? And then we see how thoughts, you know, create moods, how moods, you know, influence our behavior. Yeah? And how, our thoughts and memories and moods, influence our reactions towards certain situations. But without observing this, we will not be able to understand. Because it is a process, If you look, if there's somewhere, a pipeline or a tap somewhere, and then we open it and see the water comes out, it's fine, Where is the water coming from? So we have to follow, we have to follow the pipeline and see where it's coming from. And then we understand why the water is like this, or why the water has lots of pressure, or why the water has no pressure, And that's the same thing for our moods, for our action, for our reaction. We have to follow it up. And a lot of things, are created, with the first kind of thoughts when I wake up, I don't want to get up, I have to get up, I don't want to meditate, I have to meditate, These kind of thoughts, color the whole day, And then frustration comes out because we want, we desire to have certain results. And that is not, that's not practice. Practice is just going one step at a time. No matter if you think it is difficult or if you think it is easy, We just do one puto and then do another puto afterward. Or we observe the breath going in and breath going out and then observe the next breath going in and going out, That is practice. Not looking, not looking for the side effects of our practice. I want to get calm, I want to get calm. That doesn't lead to calmness. If we don't do anything, it doesn't lead to it. We have to work. If you want to learn to walk, we have to learn to walk. If you want to meditate, and be successful at meditation, then we have to learn meditation. And then it starts, with the first step, with the first puto, And each thought that just comes in, we patiently replace it with the word puto, or patiently replace it with our attention on the breath. That's the key to the practice, Getting frustrated means we have a lot of desire from our practice. And the desire for our results of the practice, is never helping us, it always deters us, And then we get disheartened, because our practice doesn't lead anywhere. We never ask the question, who's telling us that it doesn't lead anywhere? If we continue our walk in the right direction, we will end up at the goal that we set ourselves. If you constantly ask ourselves, is this the right way? Does this lead? But it's so difficult. Should I go walk on? I didn't see any results. We haven't not yet climbed the mountain where we can start seeing things. And climbing a mountain is always difficult. It's strenuous effort. And that's what we need, strenuous effort and consistent effort. Consistent effort, no matter what kind of thought comes in, the moment we realize the thought comes in, we replace it with Buddha, or with the attention on the breath. No matter what comes in the mind, we just replace it, with the attention on the breath or with the Buddha. And that is our consistent effort, And that's what we have to do. But we don't like to do it, we just like want to dream, Well, I'm not successful in my practice, the answer to that is very clear. Because you're not consistent in effort. If you want to learn, then remember, the days when you were young, and you wanted to walk. We wanted to explore the world, that's why we wanted to walk. So how much effort did we put into this learning to walk? A lot of effort. We never gave up. No matter how hard we fell, how often, we scratched our head or scratched our knees, And it was a lot of pain, In the moment, the pain was gone, we got up again. Otherwise, we wouldn't be able to walk. And meditation is just like that, No matter how much we fail, I mean, through consistent effort, you will reach a goal. The moment we are kicked out, our mind is going loose, the moment we realize our mind is going loose, we just go back to the Buddha. That is our center point. That is our anchor. That's our lifesaver. The Buddha or the breath is your lifesaver. If you swim in the ocean, you don't know which direction you take. You can swim east, west, south, north. And you will drown if you don't have a lifesaver, if you don't have an anchor. And that's what we need. Through the whole day, constantly reminding ourselves, am I with the Buddha or am I with the breath or not? That is our daily work. And of course it is not easy. We let our mind run wild for so many years, for so many lives, for so many lifetimes. It won't be easy to curb it in. But that's what we have to do. We have to curb it in. And once the mind gets a little bit calm, we learn to know the quality of the Buddha and the quality of the breath. Is the breath fine? Is the breath, is the breath long or is it short? We don't want to judge it, we just want to know it. But your expectation of the breath should be, it should be calm. Just realize how the breath is. That is the practice. Not to make it somehow. If the Buddha is deep or shallow, just notice that, it's shallow, just let's go back to the Buddha. It's shallow because we lost our interest. The breath becomes subtle because we get calm, because we got concentrated. The breath disappears because we lost our interest in the breath. All these things. So consistent effort. Effort is one of the it's one of the enlightenment factors. Patience, it comes with equanimity. It's also one of the enlightenment factors. Laziness is not one of the enlightenment factors. As much as you like laziness, as much as you like comfort, comfort is not one of the enlightenment factors. Discomfort is the first noble truth. There's discomfort. Why am I discomfort? What is the reason? There's pain, there's dukkha. That's discomfort. So find the source of it. The moment you go back to the breath or your Buddha, the discomfort also disappears. Except if it is pain in the body. Might disappear or might not disappear. When it gets so strong that we can't concentrate on the Buddha or on the breath anymore, then we start investigating the pain. What is pain? You sit in front of the TV and watch movies for 2 hours or 3 hours and there's no pain. The moment you sit in meditation for 20 minutes, you feel completely wrapped up in pain. Or some people sit in the airplane for 11 hours, and there's no pain. Because the mind is distracted. And the pain comes from, concentrating the mind. The moment we let the mind go, the pain disappears. You all have realized that the moment you get up, if you think you can't stand the pain anymore and you get up from your meditation, the pain is gone. Just like magic. So realize this. Ask the right question. Asking the right question is leading to wisdom. What is this body? What is the nature of this body? What am I doing in this body? Is the body and the citta two different things? There's a citta within the body. Just like there's a driver in a car. When the driver in the car is very aggressive, the driving is very aggressive. When the driver in the car is very calm, you know the car, the movements of the car are very calm.
Yeah?
And so is it with the citta. When the citta is very, very active, you know, I mean the body is very active. Hmm? It scratches here, it moves here, it moves there, here. Yeah? It's because of the citta. That drives this body. Just like the driver, you know, drives the car. Realize it. Understand it. And have consistent effort. Yeah? And don't change things. Yeah? Or ask yourself, why do you want to change things? Yeah? We always, you know, I mean, when we come from the West, you know, we always have logical, reasonable answers. Yeah? Oh yeah, that is better, you know, if you change it like that because of this or because of that. Yeah? You want to change it in the first place because, I mean, there's dukkha. And you don't realize it, dukkha, I mean, you skip that stage of dukkha, that there is dukkha before you do something. Yeah? So you don't realize it, and then everything, you know, so you, oh yeah, I mean, if I change this, you know, it will work out. You know, if I change that, that will work out. Yeah. But what is the cause for you changing things? The cause for changing things is dukkha. It's dissatisfaction within your heart, yeah? Be it physical dissatisfaction or be it mental dissatisfaction. That's why you want to change things. But you don't realize it because we are so used to it, you know, we constantly do something, yeah? And we only do something because of dukkha, because of this First Noble Truth, yeah? And there's constant dukkha, yeah? Not constantly, yeah, but there's very often, yeah. I mean, most of the time there's dukkha, yeah. Except, you know, except when we are in a state of samadhi, when there's no dukkha. So that's why we should rest there more often, you know, in the state of samadhi. Yes. To see, you know, there's a stage, you know, where there's no dukkha. And then realize what this stage is made of, yeah. It's made of no thoughts and no memories, you know, just satisfaction. Okay, understood? Khao chai bang me?
ไม่ค่อยนะครับไม่ค่อยเอาเมื่อฟังเทศในภาษาอังกฤษก็ฟังในใจ
ไม่ต้องพยายามให้เขาใช้ภาษาอังกฤษเขาใช้ฟังในใจนะเพราะว่าในใจก็มีแต่ภาษาเดียวมันฟังพอเข้าใจแต่ว่ามันปฏิบัติต่อไม่รู้เรื่องครับมันอดอาหารแล้วมันคิดอะไรไม่ทันครับคิดตามไม่ทันไม่ต้องคิดเมื่อคิดนั้นมันจะมีปัญหา แล้วเมื่อภาวนาแล้วพูดอาจารย์ก็พูดเรื่องภาวนานะทำอย่างนี้อย่างนี้อย่างนี้เมื่อถามอย่างนี้อย่างนี้นะมันจะใช่ก็รู้นะแล้วภาวนามันจะขึ้นมาเองนะเมื่อทดลองนั้นมันไอ้เข้าใจภาษาอังกฤษนะมันจะต้องคิดมากฮะแล้วจะบางทีก็แปลไม่ถูกด้วยนะแล้วมันซับซ้อนไปหมด เมื่อฟังในใจก็ไม่ต้องสนใจเหมือนกันมันภาษาไทยนะเหมือนกันนะเวลาอาจารย์ก็พูดนะบางทีก็คิดนี่มันความคิดออกไปนะและความคิดออกนะฟังอื่นก็ไม่ได้ฮะอาจจะเพราะว่าอาจารย์พูดต่อไปแล้วความคิดมันอยู่โน่นนะแล้วฟังไม่ถูกต้องนะเข้าใจโอเค
Do you have anyone of you have any questions? Yeah?
For the breath meditation, the mind gathers at one point at the tip of the nose.
Yeah?
Then how about for Buddha, where does the mind gather?
Buddha?
Yeah.
It gathers with Buddha.
Is it inside the brain or?
Doesn't matter.
You don't worry about where it is, you know. I mean, with breath, you know it is at the tip of the nose because that's where we feel. But sooner or later, you know, when the breath becomes very calm and subtle, and when our concentration is very good, yeah. I mean, the point of concentration is still the tip of the nose, but the knowingness goes there from where it comes from, yeah. So it actually, you know, even the knowingness of, you know, observing the breath comes from here. And sooner or later it will go back here. And the same thing happens to the Buddha. At the beginning, the Buddha is all over the place, but it will come. Sooner or later, it will come back to the heart, where it arises, yeah? Because all things arise within the citta, yeah? That's where it goes, yeah? So, for the Buddha, you don't have a place, you know, of concentration. Your concentration is on forming the word Buddha, yeah? Okay?
Write down some questions for daily reflection.
You can do, yeah. Sometimes, you know, in the beginning, write it down, yeah.
Like, what was
And sometimes, you know, it's helpful, you know, if you have a certain insight, you know, to write it down to make it a little bit more permanent. But don't get lost in it, yeah. It is a training. I mean, this recollection is also a training of our memory, yeah. But if you find it helpful, yeah, I mean, in the beginning I was writing down until, you know, years later I just stopped writing things down. Because, I mean, I saw they have no more importance. What I thought in the beginning was important, you know, I mean, over the time, you know, I was completely unimportant. But it might help, yeah. I mean, see, you have to judge for yourself how much it helps you, yeah.
Writing down the answers or the questions?
No, the question. Writing down the questions and, you know, I mean, once in a while write down if you think you have a deep insight, the things that you should do or how to proceed, write them down, yeah? And then, you know, I mean, after a week, you know, you look at it and say, why didn't I do it?
Yeah?
Yeah, shaking. Yeah.
From here and there, and my body kind of squeeze.
Yeah.
Sometimes they come first here, then go to here.
Yeah.
Then down.
Yeah.
And sometimes the whole body.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the head and sometimes the skull.
Yeah. But why are you interested in that? Why are you not interested in the breath? How is the breath at the time when you notice that shaking? I mean, we always like to go on to these sensations that are more dominant than the sensation of the breath. Yeah? I mean, when the breath becomes calm, you know, all sorts of things can happen. Yeah? And then our mind switches automatically to the more predominant things. Yeah, because the breath has become subtle or the Buddha has become subtle, you know, and these things seem to be more interesting because they are more predominant. And then you go out and forget all about our practice. Our practice, you know, you should ask yourself all the time, when you notice the shaking, yeah? Ask yourself, am I with the Buddha or am I with the breath? Or am I with the shaking? And then you know, when you're with something else than the Buddha or the breath, then you're gone off the rail.
Yeah, now I feel it comes here. Then try to go out.
Yeah, and then you follow it. Yeah, and that's exactly what we have to do, where we have to have determination not to follow it. Yeah, whatever happens, let it happen. You know, I mean, just stick with the breath. Yeah, I mean that the knowingness of the things that happen, you know, you will not be able to erase them. Yeah, but if you follow them, I mean, you know, they will lead you. They will lead you astray, yeah? I mean, just like I said, you know, you go off the rails. Okay? And it's, you know, this is your predominant problem, and that's why you can't really get concentrated. Because every time melts, you know, the kilesas bring up something, you know, and they distract you with this, and you've gone off the rail without even knowing it, yeah? So, I mean, ask yourself each time when you notice something, am I with my Buddha? Am I with my breath? If you're not with the Buddha or not with the breath, then you know you're off the rail. Okay? Yeah, write it, you know, I mean, write it down, you know, if you tend to forget it, you know, and put it in front of you when you sit meditation, and then, yeah, when something happens, am I with my Buddha? No. I was with the feeling. And the feeling's changing.
And then interesting.
Yeah, of course it is interesting. That's why the mind goes out, yeah? The mind always likes to go to the most predominant thing, yeah? There are so many things happening within the realm of the body we are not aware of, yeah? Because we are always with the one thing that is most dominant, yeah? So, I mean, if there's a loud sound, we instantly go to the loud sound, you know, and we don't feel anything else, yeah? I mean, we wouldn't feel the pain, you know? We're just in very, you know, very agonizing pain, and then suddenly comes a loud sound, and instantly, you know, the agonizing pain is gone, you know, and we are with the sound. That is the way of how our mind works, you know, it always goes to the most predominant thing. And that's what we have to train it to bring it back to one center point, to the anchor. Okay? Question? Huh? No more questions? So then we stop. Yeah, but it's the answer is the same as before.
I should not focus on it.
No. It will come, and you will notice it, you know, if the longer you stay on your object, I mean, the more dominant it becomes.
But it seems like I'm distracted.
If you're distracted, if you go to that feeling, I mean, it soon disappears, because that's the nature of the feeling. But this feeling of gratitude that arises, yeah, becomes through your practice of, you know, being centered on one point. So if you're centered on this point and keep your concentration on this point, I mean, the gratitude, you know, will encompass the whole body, you know, or the whole being, and will become more and more intense, yeah? And then even tears can flow, and you just let them flow and keep going on your, you know, keep going on the Buddha, on the breath, yeah?
Okay. Maybe there's an attachment if I switch.
Yes, that it's the same thing that I, you know, answered for Tanudugama, yeah? I mean, it is, you know, we always like, it is predominant now, and it is a nice feeling. So we like to switch to it, yeah? But we forget, you know, what caused that feeling to arise in the first place. What caused it? Our effort, constant effort of staying with the Buddha or with the breath. Yeah? How can you not be grateful, you know, I mean, if this feeling of happiness or satisfaction arises? Yeah? But it's also a distraction, yeah? So then we go to this feeling, you know, and then suddenly our concentration, you know, is gone. Yeah? If you would stay on this, you know, the feeling really becomes very intense, yeah? And sometimes, you know, you might have the feeling you can't even bear this intense feeling, but you will get used to it. Just don't go on to the feeling, yeah? Just keep, you know, keep your concentration on the Buddha or on the breath, yeah? Okay?
Thank you.
Yeah, I mean, everything can arise, you know. I mean, I don't know, it depends on the character of the person, what will arise, yeah. For me, a lot of gratitude was arising, you know, the moment I got this, you know, got into this stage, you know, where everything disappears, you know, I mean, I was really grateful. Yeah, and the tears were running out. But that is the reaction, you know, and, yeah. The first time you get confused, you know, or you get delighted, yeah. But, you know, it came because you really get more and more one-pointed, you get more and more unified with your true self, yeah. And how can that not be grateful, or how cannot, yeah? I mean, when you're unified with yourself, you're unified with all beings, yeah. And that can arise, you know, the real metta. Yeah?
Then the problem for me, then I get images from these people, a lot of people, and when I feel metta, and then some images come in, then I start to feel them sometimes very hard.
Just like I said, don't worry too much, you know, about these things. Just keep on doing what you do, yeah? Keep on with the Buddha. I know it is difficult because, I mean, it is the nature, you know, I mean, we let the mind loose, you know, and it's now the nature of the mind to go for everything, you know, what is predominant, yeah? Always ask yourself, am I with the Buddha or am I with the breath, yeah? Or am I with the object of investigation, yeah? Okay? Understood? It's nice and cool, so I mean, there's no cause for not to practice.